Gospel reading this morning, as it has for much of the year, comes to us from Mark's Gospel. This morning we read in chapter 10, verses 35 through 45, which is an interesting encounter between Jesus, James, and John, and finally between Jesus and all 12 of the disciples, about the nature of servanthood. Let us listen together for God's word. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came forward to him and said to him, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." And he said to them, "What is it you want me to do for you?" Then they said to him, "Grant us to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left in your glory." But Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you are asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink or be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with?" They replied, "We are able." Then Jesus said to them, "The cup that I drink, you will drink. And with the baptism with which I have baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right hand or my left hand is not mine to grant, but it is for those for whom it is prepared." When the ten heard this, they began to be angry with James and John. So Jesus called them and said to them, "You know that among the Gentiles, those whom they recognize as their rulers lord it over them, and their great ones are tyrants over them. But it is not so among you. But whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you must be slave of all. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for men." God bless the reading and hearing of this God's holy word. Dear ones, let's be together in the Spirit. We're grateful, God, for this time, this place, and these people in your presence. Break open your word this morning so that it's not my word or our word, but your word for our lives and nothing less. Amen. Fear can make us do strange things. Have you heard about the growing trend in American culture to prepare for the zombie apocalypse? Have you heard that phrase before? Preppers, as they are called, try to prepare themselves for any number of human-made or natural disasters that collectively are referred to as the zombie apocalypse. Now, as good New Englanders, most of us are preppers already, right? We put some food and medical supplies, maybe some batteries and flashlights aside for a couple of days, maybe up to a week in case of a blizzard or a blackout or some sort of severe storm. Preppers, though, with a capital P, try to prepare for more serious things, like a global economic meltdown, like a global pandemic, like if a meteor was to strike the earth, like a complete collapse of society. And so the preppers do things like buy bunkers in the middle of nowhere. They hoard seeds, and they buy dozens of guns and thousands of rounds of ammunition and bury them in their backyard so that they can be prepared for the zombie apocalypse, the hordes that are sure to come, whatever form that apocalypse takes. There's a writer for CNN named Blake Ellis who wrote an article for CNN Money, and he went and talked to a number of preppers and discovered that many of them spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to secure mountain retreats that are fully stocked in these bug-out vehicles that get you from the cities and the suburbs out to these places where there are fewer people. I guess there's more protection out there. Now, it might be easy to write these folks off as sort of fringe kooks, but the fact is, and what Ellis found, is that these are your neighbors. They're us. They're people who live right down the street from us. There's one fellow in particular named Phil Burns who he interviewed and who was featured on a cable show recently called Meet the Preppers. Now, Phil Burns is a spouse and children and a day job, but he also runs an organization called American Preppers Network. And so he wrote this about his organization as part of their organization's mission statement. He said, "We are adamant in our belief that any of these disasters can be overcome. With proper preparation and insurance, we believe that humans have an amazing capacity to assess, adapt, and overcome any obstacle that falls before them." Which sounds reasonable. and responsible, I think. I mean, to celebrate human resilience and to try to educate people so that they are more self-reliant. It sounds reasonable and responsible until you discover that Phil Burns spends 20 cents of every dollar that their family makes to prep. And he's already spent, he admits, $20,000 on food and guns alone. Now, I don't think that Phil Burns or preppers like him would agree with me. But I don't think that their motivation for prepping comes from a desire to be self-reliant or to help their families and their communities become more self-reliant. I think the primary motivation for this degree of prepping comes simply from a place of fear. Fear about an unknown future. Fear about what might happen. Fear about not being in control, fear about not having insurance, as Phil Burns wrote, to deal with the threats that are sure to come our way. And so preppers of all kinds spend lots of time and lots of money preparing for the zombie apocalypse. Fear can make us do strange things, I think. Well, in Mark's Gospel, chapter 10, verses 35 through 45, the standard interpretation of this passage has nothing at all to do with fear. Because the standard interpretation is this. Jesus has just predicted for the third and final time to his disciples that he is to suffer and to die. Enter the self-centered and dense James and John in verse 35, who just rush right past Jesus' impassioned prediction, as it's called. Move right past his pain and his anguish in order to secure their own desires and needs. Jesus, they start with manipulation in their hearts. Will you do what we ask? What do you ask? Jesus says. Well, will you put us on your right and left hand when you come into your glory? Which was a way of asking for a position of power in the reign of God that was sure to come in Jesus Christ. But Jesus, sensing their manipulation, sensing their desire for position and power, sensing that they just aren't quite able to get yet what it means to be his followers, he uses this as an opportunity to educate them. He says, do you really understand what it means to sit on my left and right hand side? Do you know that that means that you'll be crucified along with me and hang on my left and right as I suffer and die, and so you too will participate in my suffering and death? Follow me, Jesus tries to explain to James and John and to all 12 of the disciples now. That following Jesus isn't about power and position. It's not about being served. No, because following Jesus is about sharing the cup of betrayal. It's about being baptized into a suffering servanthood, which Roland read for us, that passage from Isaiah that was written some 600 years before Jesus, but Jesus clearly knew about it. And it's echoed here in this passage. Following me is about entering into a suffering servanthood. It's about exposing your threats to suffering, exposing yourself to suffering, exposing yourselves to threats, exposing yourselves even to death. Following me is not about being above others. It is about emptying yourself. It is about giving yourself for the life of others and for the life of the whole world. And because you are dense and self-centered, you've missed it. This is a standard reading of this passage. But scholar Charles Campbell wonders if something else isn't going on here. Is it really just that James and John are dense and self-centered? Is it that they're so terrible and so awful that they move right beyond Jesus' pain and anguish and passion in order to secure their own needs? Or could it be that they've heard Jesus loudly and clearly? They know he is to suffer and die, and following him means that they will suffer and die too. And having heard that, they are terrified of a world they did not make and cannot control. Campbell says it like this. Maybe Jesus' ominous predictions of his passage have become clear to them. Maybe they do understand what lies ahead. And being afraid, they seek a promise of a secure future. James and John may not be power hungry. They may rather be acting quite naturally on their fears. I think it's an interesting and helpful alternative reading to this passage. Interesting and helpful because it teaches us not just that we're dense and self-centered, not just that we're broken and breaking and wounded, it's that we are dense, self-centered, broken, and breaking people who are afraid, terrified of the threats that are sure to come. And so our brokenness combined with our fears move us to miss the point of the gospel completely. They move us to seek insurance for whatever the world has coming down the pipe for us. Our brokenness and our fears combine to move us to retreat from the world as preppers rather than to be open to it. Our brokenness and our fears move us to see power and position rather than to a Christ-like way of the cross. Fear can make us do strange things. Friends, this is not an easy passage. It is not any safer for us today than it was for James and John all those many years ago. This passage is not easy, and it is not safe, but it is good. And here is its good news. That Jesus meets us, meets you and me and all of us, right in the middle of our dense, self-centered fear. And even though he is on his way to death on the cross, he stops to offer us the gift of transformation. Again, Campbell says it like this. Here is Jesus' great promise for the church. We need not always live in fear. We need not continually seek our own security. Rather, we have Jesus' promise that we can live as faithful disciples as we seek follow him. We see the good news is that through the waters of our baptism and sharing the cup of Christ's table, that even we knuckleheaded followers of Jesus are able to resist the urges we feel to secure our security through wealth and power and position. The good news is that Jesus models for us in his life and his death and his resurrection how to move beyond our fears and to become the Christ-like servants that Jesus calls us to be in which this world is so desperate for. The good news is that the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and in that we have all that we need to become Christ's partners in his loving and saving and knitting this world back together. Fear can make us do strange things. And maybe, just maybe, each of us are preppers with a capital P, each in our own ways. Maybe we too seek security from the threats of this world. Maybe we too, whether we like to admit it or not, want to sit on Jesus' left and right hand so that we just don't have to be afraid. Maybe it's true even of us that we want the corner office and the good job and the stable bank account so we just don't have to worry anymore. Maybe we want to call the shots so that no one else can shoot. And so not just for James and John, who were preppers, but for we who are preppers today, Jesus has a word for us this morning. Be not afraid. I know this world is broken and breaking. I know this world has fangs and claws and a bad temper. But don't worry. Don't bury yourself beneath the ground in bunkers. Don't seek safety in things which seem safe but aren't safe at all. Seek me, Jesus says. And in me find security, real security. In me find a model and a plan for being servants like Jesus was a servant. In me, learn how to be love. Learn how to be freedom. Learn how to be secure. Learn how to be prepared. Learn how to be peace. Learn how to be justice. And above all, learn how to be Christ's hands and feet in this world. Be not afraid, Jesus says. And go.